This podcast contains explicit content.
Let's begin the show by starting it.
Hardly focused.
This podcast is hardly focused.
Can you repeat the part of the stuff where you said all about the things?
Dissecting the news one tangent at a time.
Settle back, fire up the color teenies, watch the pictures and hear the sounds as they fly through the air.
You know what I mean? You know that reading shit, you know what I mean? It's hard, son. Word, you know what I mean? Word, you know what I mean? Especially when them books be, you know what I mean? You know, real thick and heavy, like, you know what I mean? Word, you know what I mean?
Thanks again for that ketchup!
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Hardly Focused. I just realized I printed out my prep sheet and forgot to pick it up. I don't know. I don't even know what the name of the show is called. We are available on, I'm going to try to do all this from memory. We're available on Apple Podcasts, we're on Spotify. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts, just search for Hardly Focused. And we're also on the YouTube. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel and watch us talk at one another at hardlyfocused.com/YouTube. This is an episode number. And it is the 14th of June. Well, at least I got that in front of me. So
it's episode 461.
Yes. Yes, it is. Thank you, Ack.
You cretin.
Yeah.
It's Ack, Jack, and Nate. And I don't think the three of us have done a podcast together, just the three of us, in years.
No, for a while.
Yeah. Just as some background context, between 2006 and 2008, we did a podcast called The Ack and Jack Show, which was streamed on a failure of an internet radio station called Talk Radio X, run by a... you mentioned the word cretin, Ack. Well, this guy was a legitimate cretin. And... I mean, it was a fun run. I learned a lot about what not to do, but
we were so young.
That was a long, that was a long time ago. That was 12 years ago. And,
wow.
Yeah. But, Nate would join Ack and, me, along with Black Zach, and occasionally, Kate was there too. And then Talk Radio Meltdown was born, and then, now here we are with Hardly Focused, and it's the three of us doing this again.
Mm-hmm.
Yay, friendship.
So let's talk about that presidential election between Barack Obama and John McCain. Yeah.
Busted up my old my Chocolate Rain parody. Yep. Of John McCain.
I actually played that when John McCain passed away.
I'm gonna have a lot to answer for when I'm at the pearly gates.
Dude, it sounded great though. It absolutely sounded fantastic. So well, I'm glad you guys are here. We're still doing this all remote. Now I've made it easy for everyone involved with the show to do the podcast remote now, because almost everyone's been hooked up with some semblance of studio equipment. Mm-hmm. So Mike is especially happy about that, because he never has to leave his house now for anything. I've invited them over, you know, to be in the studio with me to do the show, and they both said to me, well, why? There's no point now.
Yeah.
You know, I think once this pandemic's over, a whole lot of us are going to just continue never leaving the house now that we know yeah. we can get away with it.
Yeah.
Yep. I've said it before, and I'll continue to say it. The stigma of being able to do everything from home has been lifted.
Mm-hmm.
They're
it's
really
weird.
Yeah. It was just fear. It was just odd, irrational fear about how productive people could be working from home, but we can all do it. And for a lot of operations, we've been able to pull it off successfully with really no interruption. I mean, I do like every once in a while just the thought of being around my coworkers, for example, just to be able to turn around and literally poke them on the shoulder to ask them a question yeah. rather than have to rely on an instant messenger or a Zoom video. But
or basically living on Teams.
Teams.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Teams has given us the possibility to continue to... That's what I say. God, you know what? Ever since I shit all over that ad, it doesn't play on TV anymore.
Yeah, they got the message.
All of the world.
We've lost the very, very important age 30 to 35 podcaster demographic.
But you know what ad keeps playing though, and I really don't want to hate it, is the ad on, it plays on Adult Swim, it's for the Last of Us Part 2.
Ah, yep.
And it's such a great ad, and they are playing an acoustic cover of True Faith by New Order, one of my favorite bands, one of my favorite songs by them, and it's just everything about that ad is awesome. It just plays during every commercial break, and I don't I don't want to hate it.
It sucks. That's the way it works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's going to continue playing for the next while, because that game comes out technically this week, and they will keep harping on it, especially since, oh, thank God, the game is getting great reviews.
Okay. So I will try to keep this as brief as possible, because I do not know where spoiler territory ends and publicly knowledge territory begins. But I did a few weeks ago read an entire allegedly leaked script for The Last of Us 2 mm-hmm. that I know was causing quite a bit of controversy, mostly because of the presence of LGBT characters that, once again, the Gamergate community that is apparently still a thing was deeply furious about. So I'm glad to hear that despite all that, it is getting good reviews, and I hope it is a very good game just to piss them off even more.
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen one review that was not a perfect or near perfect score, and even mm-hmm. then it was like a 3.5 out of 5 stars. And of course, the guy that wrote that was getting eviscerated for not giving it a perfect score and throwing off the balance. But who cares? And one of the trailers for The Last of Us Part II lauded for having what is considered to be the most realistic looking digitally constructed kiss. And it's between Ellie and her girlfriend, Dina.
Okay. That was one of those things. I was like, I don't want to come out and say it because I don't know how widely known this is, but apparently Ellie being gay has pissed off a lot of people.
See, that is...
Fuck those people.
That's so bizarre, though, because this was established in the DLC Left Behind for the first game.
I never even played that.
Yeah, it's you should. You absolutely should. It's really good. But she has a girlfriend in that. That's when she, like, you know, comes to terms, discovers that she is not straight. And it all picks up from there. So it should be a shock to absolutely nobody, in all honesty, that Ellie's gay.
Mm-hmm.
So
nobody ever accused these people of being overly smart.
No. And I, you know, I'm going to probably get off the internet for the next week leading up to this game's release. But I've heard that despite the spoilers, I guess, you know, not much was spoiled based on that leak.
That's good.
So there's.
Yeah, I was going to say I read a full leaked script, but knowing the nature of the internet, it's entirely possible that immediately after I read it, it was disproven as just some hoax that some rando wrote. Mm-hmm. I have no idea if the one I read is anywhere resembling what the game will actually be.
Yeah, a lot of the reviews I read stated.
This is The Last of Us 2?
Correct.
Yeah.
Oh, what the fuck? You guys ruined it. There's a first one?
No, they're pulling a Coheed and Cambria. They're starting with the second one, and then the first one will come out a decade from now.
Gotcha.
Yeah, a lot of the reviews I read said the stuff that was in that leak happens, but then there's so much more that was not leaked. So
I see. Okay.
So that's, you know, I will try my damnedest to, mm-hmm. especially in this day and age, avoid that, because what the fuck else am I living for at this point?
Yeah. Well, didn't Kingdom Hearts 3 do something where the script originally leaked and everyone was pissed that it seems to just end suddenly, and then they released a DLC on day one that had the actual ending, mm-hmm. and they did that so that it could not be leaked ahead of time?
Yep.
Which was probably every story-based game should just do that from now on.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. Yeah, boy, was that game just a disappointment, by the way.
I never played it.
Yeah, I just found it boring and repetitive. Visually, it was beautiful, but I very early into the game realized this is going to be a grind that I just do not have the patience for. I think I finished what was the last world I did? I think it was the Toy Story world, which was really cool. The Toy Story world was absolutely phenomenal, but after that I can't do this anymore. I think the next level too was something, I think it was like the Tarzan level from the first game, and I'm like, I don't want to do this again. I've done this twice now in two other games at least.
Just wait until you get to the Lion King for Sega Genesis level. Hoo boy.
Yep. I know what you're talking about.
So in this episode, I'm glad you mentioned that, because in this episode, we are going to have a discussion. I would like to have a discussion just about mental health in general. I will preface this by saying I think every issue that I have with mental health, with anger, with rage, can all be traced back to that goddamn stampede level in The Lion King.
Yeah, because it was so fucking hard.
There's no reason that anything like that should be so difficult.
Yeah.
No reason at all. So.
God.
I do want to talk about what's happening in New England right now with the coronavirus and the states starting to lift restrictions on things. So Massachusetts lifted a good portion of their restrictions earlier last week. I keep forgetting it's Sunday. It's a new week. So at the beginning of last week, phase two, as they're calling it, started. And in phase two, non-essential businesses can start to open. Most notably around Massachusetts, shopping malls are open once again, although it's up to the businesses to decide, in the individual businesses to decide whether or not they actually want to open. I'm looking at directories for the malls near me, and half the stores are open. The food courts aren't open. I don't think it's worth going just yet. But local businesses around here, though, otherwise the bars, restaurants, they're doing the outdoor seating, the outdoor dining. That's entertainment in Worcester. Oh man, I've been talking about this for months, hoping that they would survive, and they did, because I went and it shopped inside the other day, which was fantastic. That was a nice pick me up. So, what's now? I know it's New Hampshire, and I know that they are largely uninhabited once you get to a certain point in the state. In the state's geography, but the state of New Hampshire is, for all intents and purposes, like completely reopened, or they will be on Monday. Yeah. And then by the end of the month, the things that will not open this coming Monday will be open. And that includes the amusement parks and theaters and things like that. They have just lifted the executive order to stay at home. They have lifted the mass gathering restrictions. They're almost abruptly reversing everything and saying, hey, we're just going to go back to the way things were. And in Massachusetts, obviously, because we, I think at this point, are fifth place for highest number of cases and highest number of deaths in the union.
Yeah.
is you know, still taking a very slow phased approach. So just with your guys' understanding of what's going on, do you think that Massachusetts has reopened too early?
I'm inclined to say yes. And I get it that it's a tough balancing act between people's health and the economy and the survival of some of these businesses that might not survive if they have to stay closed much longer. And it's easy for me, someone who is not a business owner, to say, well, fuck them. We need people's lives are more important. But that's where I'm at. I just think all we're liable to start seeing is it's just going to start again. We're just going to be in the exact same position months from now of, oops, we've got a ton of cases again. Everyone go home again. You know, like, I just don't see it improving if we open everything up now.
Yeah, I'm going to have to second that. And also, I will add that it's never gone down. We've never gone down. We've kind of plateaued. So this whole idea of like a second wave happening is not a real thing because we haven't gotten over the first wave.
Yeah.
And I too agree that it's probably the most difficult decision to make because the economy is super important. And how do you like even businesses that are open at certain percent capacity are struggling because they're like, that's not enough. But like at the same time, if people are dying, I've read this, I could be wrong, but it's very hard to spend money when you're dead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's largely, there may be some exceptions to that rule, but I think largely it's the case.
Yeah. So it's tough to say because like it's a weird situation because I think scientists are still trying to figure out what is causing it to plateau. Was it the fact that we were inside? Was it the fact that we were wearing masks? They're not really sure exactly why the numbers are doing what they're doing. And I think that's the most terrifying thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, everything I've seen has said that even if you start going outside again, even if you start congregating in groups, still wear your goddamn masks. And there's video footage of like popular streets in these big cities of people, hundreds of people crowded around, no masks. I saw a clip of probably yesterday or the day before, Hampton Beach, New Hampshire, where Jack and I spent many a wayward day of our youth. Just hundreds of people on the beach, not a mask in sight. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, it kind of feels like we just gave up. We were just like, well, this is too hard. Fuck it. You know,
yeah.
I give up.
It does feel like that to me. And I have a hard time when I'm in public seeing somebody without a mask without just feeling this like rage in me to be like, I want to be super confrontational, but like, you know, these are stressful times. Who knows what that confrontation is going to do to somebody?
Yeah, there's no point.
Yeah,
there's no point in
it's not. You're not going to change anybody's mind,
right? Mm-hmm. The only people I've seen not wearing masks are the elderly, which is sort of ironic. But and I'm not gonna fight with them too. I mean, like, more power to you. Right? The ones that irritate me are the ones who are wearing the masks, but they're not wearing them correctly. Like their noses are still like their noses are hanging out. It's not like they just like put the mask down to breathe. It's they put it down ever so slightly, so they're only covering their mouth. It's like, dude, you're missing the point. I mean, not to mention the fact that masks aren't going to prevent the spread at all. Like even like the medical grade ones, the surgical masks that everyone is wearing, straight up say not to be used to prevent transmission of diseases.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's helpful.
Do you guys believe in herd immunity?
That's a tough one.
From, I would say I'm an expert, but from what I've heard it, I mean, that's basically just where you keep everyone, enough people vaccinated that the disease can't really get a foothold in the community. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, I my understanding of herd immunity, and I could be completely wrong because I never finished my PhD, is you have everyone just sort of develops like a natural immunity to it, just sort of like the common cold, right? Like we can catch the common cold, but unless we already have pre-existing conditions that could exacerbate everything, like we'll get over it, right? So that's how I understand it with this. Again, I could be wrong.
And I've heard that argument that you know, it seems like people who got it once and survived are unlikely to get it again. But it's one of those things, it's like, are we okay with just letting like 10% of the population die horribly so the rest of us can make sure we're okay going forward? Or is that not a risk we're willing to take?
Yeah.
It seems like they're going to go the route of money. Like, mm-hmm. you know, hey, money is important.
I saw someone say, we really need to rethink the phrase avoid it like the plague, because apparently we don't do that.
New Zealand, a very interesting case in New Zealand. They have pretty much eradicated the disease. Now, if I remember correctly, New Zealand is like an island, right? Like they're sort of cut off from the mainland, but they have effectively eradicated the virus to the point where soccer stadium sporting events are happening again. They have the big crowds. These are things that in the US, for example, they are petrified to do, and it'll be a long time, I think, before we'll be able to enjoy concerts and sporting events with crowds. But in New Zealand, they're already doing it because they are confident at this point that they have everything under control.
Yeah. And I mean, there are definitely places that have gotten it under control. It just comes down to testing and tracking. You know, you got to have enough tests to find out who has it and then keep tabs on them to make sure they don't spread it. And then, you know, any country that did that early enough is going to be in a good position by now. We just absolutely fucking didn't do that.
Yep.
Yeah. Social distancing, I think, has helped. The lockdown, the quarantine. I look at the numbers every day. I go on, you know, I get everything from Reddit, but I get things from Boston.com. They're always reporting everything, and they put it in visual format. They do charts and other things for simpletons like myself to easily understand. And everything is trending downwards. I mean, we're still in the, you know, the quadruple digits in terms of, you know, reported cases versus deaths. But it's going down, especially if you look at March and then April, and then it just starts going down. It's not going back up. I mean, knock on wood, it's not going back up. But I agree in that we are really highly at risk if we do not take caution with reopening everything, and especially with the unrest happening too. I mean, that's just going to exacerbate things even more.
I know. It's one of those things where under normal circumstances, I would be very supportive of the protests and riots going on, but the exact moment in history that they happen to be unfolding in, I'm kind of like, guys, COVID doesn't care if you have a good reason for gathering together in public. Yeah. It's still going to infect you.
Yep.
And the unfortunate part about that is that I've heard numerous reports about how it affects the Black community greater than the white community.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think that's like biological so much as just they tend not to have as much access to testing or preventative measures.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the unrest would have happened either way. It's just because everyone has been stuck inside and not, they haven't been able to do anything that just made it 10 times
worse. I mean,
worse.
I do wonder, you know, it sounds cynical to say, but if the protests have been gaining so much steam because 40 million people are unemployed that were employed this time last year,
right?
You know, so they're like, normally I'd love to protest, but I have work to go to. Now they're like, all right, fuck it. Let's go.
Got plenty of time to kill. Not like I'm doing anything else. Might as go well rob the Neiman Marcus.
I would love to protest. I am higher.
Yeah, I normally work right near Boston, you know, center of the city. I actually, the area right around where I work was the one that one night where looting did break out. Like everywhere right around the building where I work got hit. And I mean, I know other than that one night here in Boston, things have been very peaceful and calm. But like normally working there, it's great because like during my lunch break, if there's a huge protest going on, I can literally just take half an hour, swing down by City Hall, you know, chant a few times and then grab a hamburger and head back to the office. You know, it's just a good location to be if you want to join in the middle of a day and there happens to be some big climate change or gun violence safety, you know, any kind of rally going on there. But now with, you know, working from home, staying out, I'm not fucking going out over there to stand shoulder to shoulder with a bunch of people. I support them. I believe in their cause, but you know, I lack the conviction, I guess, to want to put myself and them at risk of the virus to join in.
Yeah, it's I just fear for my own personal safety. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
If I'm going to protest, it's going to be I'm going to be the pussy that I am, and I'm going to sit behind my mic and go off about it.
Yeah.
I mean, look,
I'm a white male, so I've got it harder than anyone. But at least I can put up the courage to like make my profile picture a black square or something. And I think we can safely say I've solved racism. So you're welcome.
Last question. New Hampshire, with them just, you know, taking off the blanket, taking off the protective bubble. Do you think the risk is just going up because they're just saying, fuck it?
I would guess.
It's a really weird situation. It's like I've read about it, and I think right now it has to do with how contagious it is. Like, it says we're at a one, but if we're above a one, it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I guess I'm not a science guy at all, but it was basically like, if you have it, how likely you are to spread it to one person versus two people, and then those two people become four people, and then those four people, you know, it's math.
It's like a game of telephone almost.
Yeah. So it's a weird, because they're thinking, oh, okay, maybe because of the warmer weather, like, people are getting out more, and studies have shown that the virus has a hard time getting around in warmer weather. And they're not sure if it's because it's warm and the particles are traveling or what. So they're really scared that come when it gets cold, that it's going to get a lot worse.
Yeah, the second wave, as they've been fearing. I mean, it was. Now, granted, everyone was doing testing in March when it was still winter when the outbreak happened. But I mean, it was also winter. It was cold. It was flu season, and people were already at risk of getting sick with something to begin with.
Yeah.
So we will see. We'll see what happens in, oh God, like October, you know, when it really starts to cool down. Yeah. And we'll see what happens. I'm assuming there's not going to be a vaccine available by then.
No. Vaccine's probably not going to be till 2021.
Yeah. The last I read, a vaccine might be available by Christmas. That's a hard might. So we'll see.
What's funny is so I work for intellectual property firm, and our team specializes in biotech. So we get a lot of like medicines and vaccines coming through. It takes such a long time for this stuff to go through. We're just now starting to see progress on cases for Zika virus, which nobody gives a shit about anymore.
That was
a hot button item like 2.5 years ago. So a bunch of people rushed to start working on it. And now that like the government's finally getting around to reviewing those patents, no one needs this anymore. Sorry, buddy.
Yeah, they don't care about spraying, you know, the helicopters going around towns just spraying. I think I heard one thing about that this year, and it was specifically going to happen over a lake, like a swamp area. They don't care about Zika anymore. They've got bigger problems to worry about. So I've got my own quandaries and curiosities to worry about from a mental health standpoint. So coming up, we will talk about that, and we'll, because we're all you know, unique and interesting individuals, how we are individually dealing with those. We will return.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
This is Hardly Focused.
We have a whole segment dedicated to that. Don't you worry.
We're Hardly Focused. You can get us at hardlyfocused.com. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/hardlyfocusedpodcast. We're also on the cesspool known as Twitter. You can find us at Focused Hardly. It's Jack, it's Ack, it's Nate. It's some form of the Ack and Jack show. As I mentioned in the previous segment, that was the show that we did together in some form 12 years ago. 12, 13 years ago. Before Talk Radio Meltdown, before Hardly Focused, there was the Ack and Jack show. And here we are. Remind me in the next break, I will throw in a Ack and Jack bumper just for just for good measure, just for old times. I think I only have one.
The balance beam.
Oh, I can hear my dog barking about something. I want to talk about mental health. That's what I want to do in this segment, because it's something that I am coming to grips with and coming to terms with. It was only 3 years ago that I finally buckled down and told my doctor I needed help. And it came around the time that in the Talk Radio Meltdown era where I actually put the show on a hiatus for like an entire summer. And during that time, I came to grips with things and got the help that I started the process towards getting the help that I needed. The thing that exacerbated it, too, that's my word of the day, exacerbate. sounds like
hey, Nate, Jack exacerbates.
What a cool guy. Yeah.
I learned from Grand Theft Auto San Andreas that there was a word masticate. Or yeah. There was one of the Grand Theft Auto games, but the word masticate, and I didn't realize that was, you know, eating. I'm a masticator.
Can I just derail you for a second because you mentioned San Andreas?
Yeah, yeah.
I recently quoted the entirety of Big Smoke's Order to Stephanie.
Oh, Jesus.
And she just
really?
Sort of looked at me and said, "What is that from?" And I said, "Grand Theft Auto San Andreas." And she's like, "Why do you remember that?"
Because of me? It was because of me, though, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't have the drop. Oh, I had it. I had it saved for a while, and I don't have it in here anymore. I'm a failure as a father and an inventor.
a human being.
The thing that kind of made me snap was it was May. I remember the exact date. It was May 18th, 2017, the day Chris Cornell died. And that was that just, I mean, I love Soundgarden, I love Audioslave, I love everything that Chris Cornell does, but that just, like, it hit me more than anything else ever had, and it was almost inexplicable why that affected me so much, but that was around the time that I said, all right, I need to do something about this, I need to get some help. A few too many panic attacks, too, also contributed to that, so I started taking this drug, whose name I can barely pronounce, but the way I describe it to people is since I started taking it, I realized I was pretty much spent my entire life in a fog with a black cloud surrounding me. And ever since I started taking this stuff, it was like the clouds broke and I was seeing sun for the first time. Like I basically felt like someone who lives in Scotland. Everything was just clear. I didn't know what it was like to live with such a clear and ironically focused state of mind. Like I can actually pay attention to things now. I feel like I'm better at retaining information because I'm not just constantly distracted and constantly worrying about things. But at the same time, the drugs just aren't enough. So,
yep. Can you send that drug to me, by the way, after the show? I think I need a couple of those.
Called crack cocaine. That, nice. That good old white powder.
Cocaine's one hell of a drug.
I realize, you know, the drugs simply aren't enough. And I just a couple of weeks ago started going to therapy. Not traditional therapy. It's obviously going to be tough right now with the way things are. See a therapist in person, but I actually heard through a podcast I listened to, Keith and the Girl, and one of their sponsors was a service called Talkspace. So I'm trying that out. Mm-hmm. It's obviously like telehealth. You can do sessions over video chat, but it's otherwise set up like Facebook Messenger, and it's very convenient. You just message you can match up with a therapist who's local to you, and then you can message them. You can send them a barrage of messages and then specify, you click a button to specify when you are ready for them to respond to you and follow up. And it's early. I'm only a couple of weeks into it, but you know, we're hitting the stride now where, you know, I'm opening up about things and what's bothering me. And then when I'm especially not in a good frame of mind, I can reach out to her and tell her things aren't going well. Case in point, what triggered me to decide that, hey, I want to talk about this during the next podcast, especially with you guys, because I'm pretty sure the three of us specifically are all fucked up to some degree.
Oh God, we could have a whole episode about how fucked up I am, but I think it's best not to.
I specifically remember I think it was like 2007 act, it was when things were bad, but I was like, I didn't realize A, it was okay to ask for help, and B, thought I was above needing help. I remember asking you about like, hey, who do you talk to about these things? And you even said like, hey, it's good that you're doing this. I think it'll help. Like, I think you were telling me, hey, you have needed this the whole time. Now granted, that was 2007. It literally took me about 10 years and some change to finally act on it. But you know, I'm glad you said that. And so this past, oh God, what day was it? It was Thursday. Oh man, it just like everything. I'm sitting here in the studio because this is where I work too, as of late. And during a conference call, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. And it was sort of like a comedy of errors that just drove me over the edge, fueled by some other personal issues that I have going on right now that I'm not going to go into detail over. But I just had a fucking full-blown panic attack. Like, I at one point, when these happen, I black out. I don't remember, like, I can remember the things that lead up to it, and then there's always a small period of time that I just do not remember. Because next thing I know, right behind me, in front of that couch behind me, I was on the ground pretty much in the fetal position. And then realizing, like, holy shit.
That's a lot.
Yeah. All right, I gotta sign off work for the day. I'll see you guys, I guess, Monday. So, you know, thankfully I got, you know, good support system and my boss who told me, hey, you know, take the time you need. But you know, also get some help. Why don't you, which I'm doing. And, you know, thankfully, thanks to Talkspace, I was able to just send my therapist a wall of text explaining what happened and, you know, what was going on. So that's where I am right now, because yay, now I'm finally getting help. Now I'm finally talking to someone about it. But, you know, especially with everything, like I said, there's personal issues I got going on right now. I won't go into detail over, but with the way the world is right now, that just is not helping things. So this is one of those topics I just want to be candid and open about, because you know, it's been a problem for a long time, and I'm finally trying to do something about it and really get some help on it, but it's you know, it's always going to be there. So you know, I want to ask you guys some stuff, and feel free to just open up about these things too, if you want. You know, obviously if you don't, that's fine too. So assuming you guys actually do get help to some degree, when did you guys first start seeking help?
One second, I just got to take my pills and then back up. Fuck you for assuming I need help.
Yeah, we're perfect. We're beautiful. We have no problems at all.
That's awesome. Ack probably just derailed his entire like schedule just to wait until we were doing the show to do that.
Do you want to take it first? And
sure. Yeah, I mean, I've been, to me, the parts that I always was more okay with was the talking to therapists. I've seen, I think, 4 therapists throughout my life. I've been seeing them since probably middle school or high school when I first started having unhealthy anger issues. And I've had mixed luck with them. I remember my first was a very stern Russian man. I didn't really click with him. He was just sort of very quiet. We would have whole appointments where we would just sort of sit there awkwardly staring at each other. Because I wasn't someone who would like open up. I kind of needed to be pushed a bit more. My second therapist was much like, I went immediately from the first to the second because the first was not a good fit. Second one was much better for me personally, you know, much more warm and talkative and receptive, which, you know, I'm sure different things work for different people, but that tends to help me more. My third was when I was in college. It was one of the ones provided by my Catholic college, and he was pretty good too. He asked me like the first session, he said, now, obviously, this is a Catholic university. I'm a Catholic myself. Do you want me to mention God at all in these therapy sessions, or would you rather like 0%?
That sounds like
any reference of God. and I said, I'm not religious. If we can leave God out of it, that'd be great. And yeah, I met him like 4 or 5 times, and we never talked about religion once. He was very professional. I was pleasantly surprised. And then my most recent therapist, about 6-ish years ago, back when I was still living in out near Worcester before I moved closer to Boston, was very into New Age, kind of like Eastern medicine.
Oh boy!
Like lots of like pressure points, acupuncture, and that didn't do anything for me at all. I mean, I don't want to say it's garbage or like it's entirely like fake. Maybe it works for some people. Like if it works for anyone listening to this, good for you. I'm sincerely glad to hear that. It didn't work for me at all.
Were you actually doing the acupuncture?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I mean, she made it sound like, I mean, there's a long history of, you know, and you know, so it's not mumbo jumbo, it's not voodoo. There are actually pressure points that are connected to the wavelengths of your brain, and by activating, you know, certain places, you can relieve stress. And but it didn't do enough for me. And that was around the time where I finally was talked into actually trying medication. So I had been going to therapy for many years on and off, but I'd always been, like you were saying, like that sort of feeling like you were above it. I had kind of been telling myself, my problems are, at the end of the day, I'm a whiny little bitch and I need to grow up. And it took a lot of convincing before I was finally willing to consider the possibility that I was actually genuinely sick, like one gets a cold or one has the flu. And if you have a headache and you take aspirin, that's not weakness. That's just common sense.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
And it finally was, you know, I had a doctor who was able to tell me, like, you're not weak. You're not giving up. This is a real scientific cure for a real scientific illness you have. So he prescribed me, at first, 50 milligrams of sertraline. I don't know what it is you've been taking, Jack. Mine is sertraline.
Yeah, it's not that.
50 milligrams wasn't quite enough. I didn't feel much of a difference. I tried it for a couple of weeks. He bumped me up to 100 milligrams, and I started sincerely feeling like a noticeable difference. And it's like you said about, like, the clouds starting to part. Is for me, what started happening is I still have those spikes in anxiety, but they started to come less often. They started to be more manageable when they did come. So what was happening was I would have these anxiety-filled moments of, oh God, I'm a failure. I'm never going to amount to anything. I'm a burden on everyone. My life is meaningless. And it would be impossible for me to shake off these feelings myself. And they were just so constant, and like several times a week, I would just be incapacitated with these feelings. And once the medicine started working, I started to notice, like, wow, it's been like 2 or 3 weeks since the last time I had a thought like that. And then when the thought did come up, instead of crippling me for an entire day, I'd feel that way for 10 or 20 minutes and then start to go, this is fucking stupid. What the hell am I thinking right now? It just started to become easier to move past these things. And I think the medication really did help me sort of get my brain into the place it needed to be to fend off these negative thoughts.
Yeah, I can relate to that, especially from the anxiety viewpoint. There were a lot of times where I would get worked up and anxious about just the, what would it be like, the most trivial thing. And finally getting that under control, I'm not worried about that stuff anymore. The thing that got it for me was just going into a new position at work that entailed a lot of responsibility and doing a lot of things I'd never done before that were out of my comfort zone. But at the same time, it was one of those things where, like, hey, I need to now be comfortable doing this and I need to get over it. So, yeah. You know, actually, you know, taking something that quells anxiety was a godsend. So, so I can relate to all that there. I wish it was just as easy for me as it is for you to say, like, hey, after 20 minutes, brushing off those thoughts and moving on. It's that part is not as easy for me. And that's actually something that me and my therapist are working on right now.
I mean, that's come with years of meeting with people, and you know, I've been on this medication for like 6 years now. So, I mean, it's something that it is going to take time, you know, and you gotta, the important thing, I think the real distinction is some people don't ever want to take those steps because it involves admitting, you know, I have a problem and I need help. And that's something a lot of people can't do. So once you've reached the point where you're able to say, I'll try anything. I hate the way I am right now. I want to be better. And you start thinking like, yeah, you got ideas, throw them at me. I will try them. I think that's once you're in that mindset, it's going to get easier from there.
Yeah.
And that's the weird part about what you just said is a lot of people have that feeling of like, oh, I don't want to be blah, blah, blah. But the point is most people have some sort of anxiety. Mm-hmm. It's part of life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An anxious world out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, things, you know, said it before, I'll say it again, I'll keep saying it, things out there are just not helping in the least. And that's part of the reason why I finally reached out to someone, is it wasn't even just that. It was, you know, and honestly it was me playing an Xbox game and throwing my controller down in anger and then realizing, all right, this is not the the way to do things. This is not the way to react. Yeah. Also, broke my controller. So now I need to spend $70-$80 on the Cyberpunk 2077 limited edition Xbox One controller. Oh, no. So,
yeah. This mental health problem brought to you by Project CD.
Nate, how about you? And did you finally realize that you needed help?
So, okay, I have a little bit of a long story, but I'll try to make it as short as possible. I've always had anxiety. Like, I was in elementary school, and I remember seeing an ambulance drive by, and I would have a panic attack that my parents were in it. So I've always had anxiety. I think it's always changed, though. So I used to live in New Jersey. And then I moved up to Massachusetts right around the end of fifth grade. And right around then, it was like in the intermediate school area. So before the middle school.
Right.
So I had a teacher that wouldn't let me go out and make friends because he kept me in supervisory because of made up reasons.
Was it Josty?
It was Jonas.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah. I have no problem saying his name because fuck that guy. He fucking ruined my life. So long story short, I go to middle school and everybody has their little cliques like, oh, you're from the North Grafton. Oh, you're from the South Grafton. Who's this guy? He must be yours. No, he must be yours. So I had a really tough time making friends. And I got like into the habit of being anxious about friendship, which explains why I'm so fucking weird all the time to people. Because like I try to be like, oh, I need to give you guys a gift to have your friendship, or, you know, I have to do something to prove that I'm worth it to you. So that was early 2000s. My mom was like, you fucking need help. My mom was the one that was like, you're going to go see a therapist. Cause
I think your mom's like, fuck you, you fucking fuck.
No, it wasn't like that. She was basically like, let's try. She's super supportive. She's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just, for the sake of comedies and the lols.
Hey mom, like, this cat therapy session you took me to doesn't have any cats in it. Wait a minute.
This is a trick. So they put me into therapy, and it was really great. I found that I really liked talking about my problems, mm-hmm. which then became a character trait. They put me on Paxil, which was really great, really helpful. I gained a little bit of weight, but whatever. I go up into high school where I'm like, you know what? I've been developing these skills. Maybe it's time to step off. Also worth noting that at the end of high school, Paxil changed. It went from being like whatever it was to generic version. And my mind, again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a professional, so don't take my words. But to me, I was like, well, it's different. I'm not going to respond directly to that well, because I've already decided that it's not going to work. And medication is great, but medication is only half of the battle. Mm-hmm. You got to do like the legwork mentally. So I said, you know what? I guess I'm going to have to come off of this because it's not working for me anymore. And I'm just going to have to see how it goes. I was practicing cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. That's what I'm doing right now.
For those of you who don't know, it's basically training your brain to ask yourself questions about the way you're thinking as a means to like reverse your thinking habits. Like if you're like, man, like my life is terrible and it's never going to get better. You're like, wait a minute. Am I using my feelings as facts? Like you can ask yourself so many questions to like train yourself to get into the habit of it. So that helped. Then fast forward to semi-recently, I decided to quit my job of retail and do YouTube because I was making enough money on YouTube to support myself that I was like, you know what? I'm going to be able to take that jump. And it was like, I got to stay home. I got to goof around all the time, play video games whenever I want. I was my own boss. It was my dream job. And I was still not happy and I was still anxious. And like, it bothered me. So I actually called up my therapist from when I was a kid. And she was like, you know what? We just changed the rule. We are allowed to accept patients your age. Do you want to come in and talk? And I was like, hell yeah. Mm-hmm. So I went in and have been talking ever. I'm still talking with her. So I've had the same therapist since I was like 10.
Wow.
Oh, that's awesome.
Nice.
And it's been great. However, I will say recently, YouTube just decided to say, boop. And that's, it decided you're not making money anymore. Like, it just turned my monetization to off.
Hmm.
In the worst time it could possibly ever do that. So as of recently, I haven't been able to talk about it because I don't know what to say about it.
Yeah. Do you know why? Do you know why that happened?
It happened because they weren't happy with the videos that we were making. I don't need to really get into it, but it's just, it's changed its policy a few times. And yeah. Basically, they just sent us a notice that said, hey, you're not able to monetize anymore. We've been worried about YouTube for a while, so we started a new channel called Space Bear Comedy. Please subscribe because I might die. No, we started that to kind of put things all on that channel. And So basically I have a year to find out if this is going to work. So there's a lot of anxiety with that. Mm-hmm.
Especially when your livelihood is literally on the line because of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a little bit tough. I've been a little bit quiet with friends lately. I've been asked to do some shows with you and I said, hey, I don't think I'm in a spot to really talk about because on top of that, I have the anxiety of saying things and people reacting poorly to them because it seems these days that if you have any sort of opinion, people jump on top of it and you're like, no, I didn't. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it that way. Or so I've been scared to talk. So on top of losing everything that I've ever wanted, possibly I could be jumping to conclusions. I've been dealing with that. Cognitive behavioral therapy has definitely been helping. But I want to jump on board because you guys have kind of inspired me to maybe try medication because as a comedian, you're scared to try to medicate because you're afraid you're going to lose your art. Like you're the thing that makes you funny because the way that I've been working lately is what if blank, like that's anxiety, right? But I started to be like, what if I turned into a pizza? And I use it as like comedy, like, you know, like a,
yeah.
I use my what ifs as comedies. And I've been afraid to try medication because when a couple years ago, I was put on two different medications. It was like Effexor and Ativan. And I turned into a fucking robot.
Like, oh, yeah. Ativan will fuck you up.
Well, it completely deleted all of my emotions, which some might say, that sounds great. I would love to get rid of my emotions. It was horrible because you need some level of emotion to go anywhere in life, mm-hmm. like to feel it's necessary to get out of bed, to dress appropriately for a job interview, mm-hmm. to, you know, open up certain relationships with people. You need to have these emotions. I had none of it.
Yeah.
And Ativan was also really awesome. And it scared me how awesome it was because it was like basically like being drunk without any of like the dangers of it. I was like just super cozy, super warm, fuzzy. And I was scared I was going to get addicted to it because with a lot of medications, there is a lot of dependency on it for some people. And I was scared that was going to be me. I was going to become dependent. So there's been a lot of anxieties with taking medications, but having you guys talk about the benefits that you guys have had, the way you describe it as the fog lifting and the black clouds, like, kind of makes it seem really fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I mean, I want to be clear. I think based on what I've read, I'm pretty lucky that the second dosage I got prescribed has worked so well for me. I've read horror stories like what you've described of people getting ones that make them feel like they're not themselves anymore, or they feel like they're a zombie, or it's a process. What works for one person isn't going to work for someone else.
Sometimes
it's going to take some trial and error before you find something that really you feel, okay, I feel better, and whatever side effects there might be are worth it.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the hard part too, is because these drugs take a little bit of time to work, like to fully set in. I think it was said like possibly a month, maybe.
Yeah.
A month,
I was told for mine it's about 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's definitely not immediately. Yeah, I think you should do it. I mean, I know, like, and don't do Ativan. I know someone else who was on Ativan who said the exact same thing. They turned into an emotionless robot and. They were, when they stopped taking it, things kind of went south for them again because now they weren't medicating, but at the same time they felt a lot better because now they actually could express emotion and they weren't they weren't under that haze, that Ativan Halen haze. Pete Davidson from Saturday Night Live, you know, don't be worried that, you know, you won't be able to perform without or while on medication. Pete Davidson actually needs to be high to be able to function. Like, he needs to smoke before he can do anything, especially stand up, especially anything related to his career, because he otherwise just can't function and he won't be able to perform. He won't be able to do anything that brings in the money. So
I'm glad you brought that up because I also read an article that Bill Hader had a horrible experience with Saturday Night Live in his earlier years with anxiety until the point where he was like, I got to get help, because he was saying like he was petrified. Like, so, but he's a funny fucking guy. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah. And just,
but you're right. You're right. What you said, it's different. Every medication is different for everyone. So you got to try to see what works for you.
Mm-hmm. Just make sure you have someone you can talk to as well, even if you're not actually going to any therapist or anything like that. Just make sure you have someone you can reach out to who actually, you know, will listen, because that is what, you know, makes it tough for me, is not having, not typically having a good, I guess, support system in that regard. It's just on on Thursday when I had my snafu, I had a, you know, I bailed out of work early because of it, but I still had a scheduled meeting with my boss that I had later in the afternoon. So I talked to her and I just like laid it out on the table, and I'm glad I did, because that really helped with clearing my mind. And also I needed, you know, words of encouragement that I could only get from a, you know, a supervisor that I actually am happy to be under and work with. So, you know, make sure you have that good support system, and also someone, make sure whoever it is you're talking to doesn't tell you to just kill yourself. Right. Cause like,
yeah, that's a good point.
When I was, you know, when I was younger, now you mentioned intermediate school, right? So that's like the fourth and fifth grade. And I think that was around the time that things really started to hit the fan for me, in that like issues that I had with my parents, my mother especially, those really started to take form. And then you talked about that, you know, I name dropped that one teacher thinking it was that one guy, cause he was like, Ack, you remember him, shell-shocked Vietnam War veteran. I mean, God rest his soul now, but like the guy had some issues of his own, and you know, going to school, dealing with that, being under, you know, constant anxiety of the guy blowing up on me or anyone else, and then going home to basically the same thing, but you know, in the form of my mother, right? Like that's not gonna help, right? And that, those aren't good support systems to have. So
yeah, it sucks too, because what a lot of people don't have that, like certain people in the South think that anxiety is the devil.
Yeah.
So it's just,
yeah.
So I've been very fortunate to have parents that have supported me, but the friends part has always been difficult for me, because I'm always anxious. I have social anxiety.
Oh, me too.
Like,
yeah.
Severe, like, you can remember so many of your shows where I'm like, I'm nervous. Like, I was nervous doing your show all the time. And
yeah,
I'm nervous talking to people about things because I'm afraid that, like, they're going to hate me. I'm scared of silence because, like, in a conversation, because I'm afraid that like that silence means you're bored or you're judging me, or so it's been difficult to find the right people to talk to about it. Cause you're right. A lot of people don't know what to say. And honestly, you don't have to say anything. People with our situations aren't obviously going to you to fix them, cause you got to go to a professional for that. They're not looking for you to, they're just, some people are, and that's tough because you're like, I'm not a professional. So
yeah,
I don't know what to say to you saying,
like, I feel for you, Pally, but this is AA, you want AAA.
Yeah.
Nice.
So definitely having people that will listen and hear you out is super helpful.
Yeah, indeed. Let's take a breather, because I do have more I want to say about this. Let's take a breather. We'll come back and we will talk more about mental health.
And we sing this morning that wonderful and grand old message.
You are listening to Hardly Focused.
We're Hardly Focused. You can get us at hardlyfocused.com. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on Spotify. We're on your favorite podcast app. You just search for Hardly Focused there. You can find us and watch us on YouTube at youtube.hardlyfocused.gov/net. I fucked up the URL. I'll try that again. hardlyfocused.com/YouTube. Subscribe, please. This song from Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, something I've been playing a lot of lately. I even, for some reason, was given a Tony Hawk Funko Pop, so I got that on my desk with me, because I've been playing on the PlayStation Classic a lot of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater ever since the remakes were announced. So good song, and I think this one will be on the soundtrack. I think there's only like a few songs actually that won't be on the soundtrack, but this one most definitely will be. And I still can't pronounce this band's name. Millencolin? Yeah, it's like Millencolin, I think. They're like Swedish.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I remember that.
And they're still around too. I've listened to some of their newer stuff, and it's just as good. So we're talking about mental health. We're talking a lot about when we realized we needed to reach out and touch faith, reach out and get help. We realized that it was okay to finally buckle down and say that we need help. And also having that good support system too. My mother would tell me growing up, things along the lines of, no son of mine is going to talk to a therapist. Well, thanks, Mom. That's really supportive.
That's really tough, dude.
Yeah. Also, no son of mine is ever wearing braces. Okay, cool. Well, I'm getting braces in a couple of weeks, so there's that. Not like the metal ones. I'm doing that Smile Direct Club.
I heard that you were doing the thing.
Yeah. I had to redo. So they send you like silly putty, and you need to make like a mold of your teeth. Like you have to like bite down.
I remember
down
that. Yeah. Yeah, I had to do that too.
Yep. I apparently didn't do it right the first time, and it took a month for them to come back to me to say, hey, you didn't do it right. You need to do it again. So I guess second time was a charm in a few weeks.
You sent us a perfect mold of Ben Stiller's mouth, but we needed yours.
You just reminded me of when I got fitted for Invisalign. They made the mold of my teeth, but they like used the tray, and they like put the stuff in it.
Yeah.
And when they put my teeth in it, it like the stuff shot back to my throat.
Ugh.
I started choking.
Ugh.
And like everybody, so here I am like choking, and like the doctors are like, no, you're not supposed to be choking. What are you doing? They were like mad at me. They're like,
have you considered not choking?
They're like, breathe through your nose. Why are you breathing through your mouth? I'm like, because my sinuses have never been good. So I like couldn't breathe, and then like they're like unacceptable. Well, and I was just like,
wow.
I was like, are you kidding me? Here I am like panicking. I figured it out finally. I had to like relax my gag reflex. I had to figure it out while I was there, like in the moment. But it was like an anxiety situation where I was like, I have to figure this out because they are going to kill me if I don't.
Well, to keep the spirit of Mike and Kate alive on this show, something, something, sucking dick, something, something.
Exactly.
Yeah. And my father, I told him a while back, pretty recently, that I was finally getting my teeth straightened. And he even made a comment about how he was very happy I was doing that, because he was hoping this is something I would have done as a teenager when most people do it. And, you know, a certain someone in the house was vehemently opposed to it. So, yeah. Thanks, Ma. But,
I guess this is growing up.
Yep. No. But that's, that's what I mean when I say you gotta have a good support system. I mean, here I go right now pinning the blame on my mother, but that's, you know, stuff that I gotta work out. And talk to talk to my therapist about. So so I mentioned that on Thursday I had a pretty insane panic attack, and I've had quite a few, and I'd say even in the last like 5 or 6 years I've had a few that I have been able to really accurately diagnose as panic attacks. And this one, this past Thursday, I mean, like, I think the pills that I'm taking help for reducing the frequency at which these things happen, but there's still a psychological sort of, you know, it's a behavior self-control that I need to get better about. And that is what that's sort of what I'm gathering right now, just talking to, you know, the couple of weeks I've been talking to my therapist is starting these cognitive behavioral exercises to try to calm things down. So I'm just going to assume that we've all had our share of panic attacks here, So Ak, I'll start with you. How do you cope when you have a panic attack?
I think when it comes to a full-blown panic attack, I've only ever actually had one. So that's not really as much my issue. Mine's more sort of like a long simmering anxiety over, you know, the arc of my life rather than like events that are like real big panic attacks. Mm-hmm. As I said earlier, it's more about, making sure I have the time to let myself calm down and come to the realization that what I'm panicking about isn't as big a deal as I think. A big problem of mine that obviously has gotten better over time is sort of escalation of a problem where, you know, I'll make a mistake, a very small, minor mistake that usually people wouldn't care about. And then if I'm in that bad headspace, my brain turns that into, oh, so you can't do anything right. You are literally a complete failure. Mm. You have never done a single thing right in your life. You're a burden to everyone who's ever had to put up with you. The world would see a net improvement in overall quality if you didn't exist. And it's like, somehow I've gone from, oh shit, I made this incredibly minor mistake, to, well, killing myself is the only viable solution for the betterment of humanity.
Speaking my language.
And, yeah, same
and
here.
That makes, you know, it, when I'm in a good headspace, like right now, spelling that out like that, I'm like, wow, that's insane. That makes no sense whatsoever. Who the hell would think like that? But the answer is me when I'm in a bad headspace. So I think, you know, the medication and the cognitive training sort of helps you pump the brakes on that and go, whoa, buddy, calm the fuck down. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
That is, you are completely blowing this out of proportion.
Yeah, I holy shit, can I sympathize with that? Because I, like, on Thursday when the whole shit hit the fan for me, it was all, I said it before, a comedy of errors, and it was little things, but the key thing around it was no one else knew what was happening. And no one else, I said I was on a conference call. There were a lot of people in that call, some of which I didn't even know. They didn't know. They didn't care. And that's, those are things that, like, in hindsight, like when I look at it retroactively, you know, okay, is why I would love to go back to that moment and tell myself it's the only person who is upset and worked up over it is me.
Mm-hmm.
You said, yeah, you, exactly, referring to me. But yeah, that's, it didn't affect anyone else. And it didn't affect anyone else in the house. It didn't affect, it only affected me. And it was something that I could have just kept my mouth shut and, you know, walked it off and, you know, but I was in that same mindset, and that's the mindset I get into whenever these panic attacks come on, is that I just feel like I'm failing. I can hear the voices in my head of people whom I no longer associate, with whom I no longer associate, telling me that, hey, you suck. The only thing you're good at is failing. And that's obviously, it's not a good mindset to be in, but it, and then bad things happen. So, Nate, what about you? Same question. How do you cope when you feel things are starting to fall apart?
It's interesting because up until when you posed the question, I never really realized that I've never really been awake for a panic attack. Let me explain. Most of my panic attacks happen at night and I wake up to them. Like, I wake up, my heart is racing, I feel like I'm having a heart attack, I'm sweating, I'm confused, I'm not fully awake, I'm not aware of what's going on, I feel like I'm spiraling out of control. A lot of the casual signs of, you know, things not being okay, a lot of what you were saying spoke to me, the questions of, like, I'm a failure, like, I'm not doing anything productive in this world, like, it all you know, spirals around. But when I'm able to get to a moment of understanding what's going on, when you recognize that you're having the event, again, asking yourself certain questions has helped me. I basically ask myself, how is this helping? Like, how is your mode of thought getting you to a better place? How is it working for you? Because for me, I feel like I have anxiety as a means to protect myself about the future. Like, I feel like if I worry about something, I can prevent it, or I can stop it from happening, or control it better. And this feeling of not having control is like the, ironically, the thing that's helped me the most is when I realize, hey, this isn't something you can control. This is not something you're able to steer. So you're not really going to benefit from worrying about it. This mm-hmm. is something that I've used a lot for what's been going on now. Like, I've been so worried about getting the virus that I haven't been able to focus on anything. But then I realized, instead of being angry at people not socially distancing and being angry at people who aren't taking precautions and putting me in danger, I've kind of stepped back and been like, I'm not in control of whether I get it or not. If I get it, it's just, that's it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and I know that's a really weird solution of just being like, I don't have control over it, so why the fuck am I worrying about it, you know? Like, that mindset is just kind of weird thinking, but it's what's happened. It's helped me. I don't know if it's going to help anyone because I'm so fucking weird, but
yeah,
like, asking myself, how is this helping? And is this something I can control? Have been what's gotten me back to normal.
Mm-hmm. I try to stop myself ever since, and I sound a little ridiculous. I'm going to make myself sound a little self-conscious, a little ridiculous, because this is literally something that my therapist told me about. Again, I keep going with my therapist. All 2 weeks I've been talking, not even 2 weeks, I think it's just been a week at this point. All
that can happen in that long. So yeah, all, give yourself credit.
All 8 days I've been talking to her. You know, just a couple days ago, she told me about, you know, the one of the first like cognitive behavior exercises that we're doing. It's like a, you know, it's a 5-4-3-2-1. Methodology, I guess. And it's, what I try to do is, like, I'm outside yesterday doing yard work, and I should probably be cognizant of my surroundings to some degree, considering I am walking around with a lawnmower with you know, something that could be used as a weapon. But I find myself starting to get lost in thought over things that happened in the past year that have been bothering me, that finally drove me to, you know, finally reach out and seek help, professional help. And I start thinking about those things, and whenever this happens, I start thinking about, you know, how could this have gone differently? What would have happened if I blew my stack? If I, you know, took a situation and made it a lot worse and did something I'd regret. And, you know, when that starts happening, A, I get worked up and I get angry. And then it obviously affects the people around me. But then B, if I'm doing something like yard work, then I start fucking up. Now the lines that I'm doing with my mower aren't straight. Now you look at my backyard and you can actually see when I was distracted, lost in thought, versus when I was focusing, because the lines are all fucking zigzag.
I'm sorry. I find that just somewhat amusing that you have a visual representation of, like, yep, see that curve? That's when I had a mental breakdown.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's also a good, that's also something I should take into consideration next time I start feeling blue. But I
over here we have the panic gardens, and on your left you can see the fountain of discontent and
I stopped and I started looking around, and I started telling myself, I started asking my questions just about my surroundings. Like, okay, cool. Is my neighbor outside? What's my neighbor doing? What shit does he have on his deck right now? Let's point all the things out that he has on his deck. What can I hear besides the sound of the lawnmower? Right. Just I'm starting to like intentionally and purposely distract myself by asking what seem like stupid, simple questions, but it's because I need to answer them. I need to point these things out. So, and those are, you know, it's baby steps, but that's when things start getting hectic, when they start getting cloudy, that's what I do. I'm trying to do that now anyway. It's easier said than done, but hopefully it's, you know, it's, I was just telling you guys during the break, you know, I'm trying to play guitar every day now. Trying to sit down and dedicate 20 to 30 minutes just playing. And I've already noticed that my skill is improving just playing every day, because that's something you gotta do. You gotta work on it a little bit. Now, I wish I could say the same about that treadmill I have in my basement that's been gathering dust since February. But, you know, you work at it every day and you get better at it. So, you know, hopefully if I really put to work in my mind these things, I'll get better at it. So
that's interesting, because you've used guitar as like a meditation, which is highly recommended for people like us. I was never good at it because I always get in my own head of like, oh, I suck at meditation, but maybe that could work for you guys. I don't know if you've experienced anything about meditation, but
yeah,
they say it's great.
I know Matt Skiba from Alkaline Trio, Blink-182, he does a lot of meditation. He says that's helped him. He also lives a what do they call it? Straight edge, like a straight edge lifestyle. Like he doesn't drink, he doesn't do drugs, because he just meditates instead. See, I'm fidgety, and I'm very impatient, and I need to just constantly be moving around. So like, that's why for me it's music. Like playing guitar, at least like my arms and hands and fingers are going every which way. Playing the drums, I mean, I need to be, A, I can only do that during certain times of the day. B, I need to be prepared to just be a sweaty, disgusting mess afterwards. But it's a workout, and that's, oh man, that's hitting things. That's what's great about that. Then I get to hit stuff, but at least I get to be, you know, in a rhythm and melodic when doing so.
Fun fact, that's why I became a drummer.
Well, there
you
go.
If you remember, for a short period of time of my life, I was a drummer.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I started playing the drums. And the reason why I stopped, because I realized I wasn't good at it, but also because I was a drummer for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the cowbell and woodblock.
Oh,
I still have them somewhere.
The symbols that you somehow impressively destroyed in one day.
Yeah.
Never to this day have seen a drummer just be like, here, you could use my symbol.
Just half. Hey, I'll do
symbols. So.
I'll do you one better. I played about 10 years ago now, I played a show with my band and I managed to actually lose the symbols in the course of the night.
Wow.
So I didn't shred them, I didn't break them, I just straight up lost them. And before I transition to my last question for you guys, I have something for you. Here you go.
I'll have two number nines, a number nine large, a number six with extra dip, a number seven, two number 45s, one with cheese, and a large soap.
Yeah, I'm glad you found that. I think I was hungry the other day, and my way of telling Stephanie was by reciting that to her.
That you needed two number 45s.
And a large soda.
I just love that there's a fast food restaurant that their menu options go up to 45.
If you've ever watched like the Gordon Ramsay or Robert Irvine shows where he like goes to terrible failing restaurants and turns them around, a surprisingly common problem with them is he'll open their menus and be like, okay, you guys are supposed to be a pancake joint and you sell sushi. Like, why do you have 75 items on your menu?
Yep.
I actually get nervous when I go to a restaurant and they have too many items on the menu. I'm like, this is not going to be really good.
Now I know, because of Robert Irvine, that if you have more than like 50 things on your menu, half of them you haven't cooked in 10 years.
Yep.
You're going to have to scrape them out from the back of the freezer in order to make it for me.
No, it's a, this is a local reference, but the British Beer Company, all over New England, and then the owner closed almost all the ones that aren't on the Cape, basically, because he you know, is of a retirement age and didn't want to be maintaining restaurants that are too far from home. But another problem that they had was the menu. Every time you go, the menu would always change because they had a trillion things on there, and then they were always gradually cutting them down, and it was the same exact thing. It was either you could get burgers and pizza, or you could get sushi. Mm-hmm. It didn't, like, it, just pick one, like, family of food that you want to stick to. Stop confusing us. Stick with your, whatever the fuck it was that Stefan got that one time that we still make fun of him for. Happy birthday to Stefan, by the way. Oh, the bangers and mash, the thing that was very phallic when he got it.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, it was like sausage and meatballs. It was the perfect thing for Stefan. So hopefully ending on a more positive note. When with everything happening right now with COVID, with the unrests, the protests, the cop killings that just don't seem to end, what would you consider to be your quote-unquote perfect escape? Ack, I'll start with you.
Video games. I think one thing is just we live in such a cool time, right? So, like, I called my grandma the other day. She's 91.
Yeah, Grandma Dot.
Woo! And, you know, she was asking, like, oh, have you talked to your cousins recently? And I told her, yeah, I play World of Warcraft with two of my cousins. I talk to them literally every day. And that's just neat. Like, it's quarantine. We can never see each other face to face. You know, we haven't hung out in person in months. But I talk to them every single day because we log on World of Warcraft and we go goof around and do dumb shit together in a video game. And that's really therapeutic, like, to have that escape to a world that's normal and unchanging. And I mean, this is specifically World of Warcraft Classic, a game that a bunch of dumb assholes like me wanted, even though it's literally 17 years old at this point.
Tibia.
And you can tell, I mean, there are certain things about it that are objectively garbage in view of the advancements we've made in technology in the last 2 2/3 decades.
Yeah.
And yet there's something so soothing about it. It's the same game that has not changed in 17 years. And it's just like slipping into an old pair of pajamas that just, you know, they're ratty, they're falling apart, but they're just so comfortable.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah. It is just very relaxing to me.
Now, I will, before I get to Nate, I will say I'm doing the same thing. But it's odd because, like, I've been playing Far Cry 3 recently. I had an urge to play Far Cry 3. So I've been playing that. I've also been, you know, I need to finish Horizon because they just announced the new one. But these are games that, like, they're challenging. And I'm finding myself, like, getting angry because, like, I keep getting killed because I'm just not good at anything. Mm-hmm. And see, that's the stuff that boils up the blood. What's cathartic is playing a game that I keep going on about, Fallout 76, because that game you can just sit back and you're just exploring and occasionally shooting up things, but there's, you know, it's not difficult. It's almost not difficult at all to, you know, take down enemies in that game. And that is the game that I play if I'm just like, I just need to zone out and feel like, yeah, I'm not putting a lot of effort into anything. And it's,
yeah,
games like Fallout, games like, you want to know why I've bought Skyrim on every fucking platform that it has come out on? Because it is a game that I can just sit back and just play. And yeah, I don't need to worry about anything else except for the dragon that's going to come fucking Fusro Dami off a cliff.
Yeah, and the drunk Netch.
You get the random savage mod where turns,
I had that
the Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yeah. I had the Randy Savage Deathclaw mod in Fallout 4. That was always fucking, that was awesome. Even Randy Savage, one of my favorite things is if you kill the Deathclaw, he just goes, I'm such a disappointment. I've never been so bad at anything in my life.
for some reason, Jack, you know how for a while, like, the hot meme on the internet was to say, okay, boomer.
Yeah.
For some reason, every time I ever heard anyone say that line, all I could think of was the Gaben boomer mod you had for Left 4 Dead, where he would just walk around and instead of making like vomitous boomer noises, you just hear, "My favorite class is the spy."
Yeah, it was just all the audio was from him. I don't remember what it was, but he was like, he gives out his email address at one point and they just cut the Gabe N part out of it. So there was nothing better than playing Left 4 Dead, turning the corner, seeing Gabe Newell's a boomer lift his arms up to explode, but just utter a Gabe N before blowing up. that was like the mod to end all mods. There was no point to ever install any other mod for anything because making Gabe Newell a boomer was it. Oh, well turning the jockeys into Beavis too. That was also pretty good.
Yes, I remember that too.
Left 4 Dead had some good mods. Nate, your perfect escape when you're trying to get away from the world.
Video games is a big one. Also working on comedy videos or planning my comedy career or keeping busy. Those two have been my perfect escape. I've been doing like arts and crafts though too, like posting, "Hey, what do you want me to draw for you?" I can't draw. I don't have any talents drawing. So I figured it would be funny to just post things like, "Hey, challenge me to draw something and we'll draw it." Like nice. Just little tiny things to keep me busy.
I'm in sort of a same boat with just doing, you know, for the six people that listen to the show and have dedication to it, just the effort that I put in, the Hardly Focused and the production pieces and just getting everything ready to go and then posting it, doing the promotion and all that stuff. That's, you know, escape for me too. Because at that point I'm, you know, focus on this project, and I know, you know, I know it can be good and sound good, and it's just a matter of, you know, actually focusing the time to put it together. But once I start working on it, man, I'm that's it. I'm lost. Nothing else matters. I just want to get that done. Mm-hmm. Yo, hey, I'm glad that we talked about this.
Me too.
Yeah.
I actually got some, I feel like I got really good insight just because I'm, you know, I'm a noob to professional help, but, you know, like I said half jokingly earlier, the three of us especially are all fucked up. So, I figured, you know, what better people to talk to about this sort of thing and get your own insight on it. So, you know, obviously from the mental health side and with the way things are going right now, I wish the two of you the best of luck with, that. And, you know, hopefully, thanks. Hopefully things get better. So,
I mean, I'll say just from a personal selfish perspective, I am absolutely an introvert. So the quarantine has had essentially no effect on my life whatsoever.
Yep,
like, you know, not being able to go out and be around people in person is my default state. So, you know, but I very much sympathize for the people who have been struggling a lot with the changes. And you know, Nate, you mentioned, you know, it's been tough. So,
you pointed out that it's been good for me up until recently. Like, I was with my girlfriend. She was visiting, but now she's gone home and I've relocated back to my apartment.
Yeah.
And then that's when it was a wake up call. I was like, wow, I've really had it good. Like, I was one of those people that was fortunate to be like, I actually kind of enjoy this. This is actually kind of nice. And now I'm like, oh, this is why everyone's sad.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
Something that's very easy to do is forgetting that we're not the only people affected by this. And that's something I've been guilty of pretty much daily at this point. It's just remembering that, like, when I'm at work and I'm on a video conference with all my coworkers and they're all at home, just remembering, like, hey, they're doing the same thing and they all have to deal with this in their own way and make things easier for them. And I know for some, you know, you wouldn't know that things are different. And then there are others where you can tell that their tone has changed, their attitude has changed, and you know they're struggling. You know they're trying to do their best, but it's just tough with the way things are. So
yeah. Well, we shall see how I do, because as an extrovert, I was around somebody and it was nice. So we'll see how long it takes for me to be like, oh no.
Yeah, you'll be doing the setting up a soccer ball with a face painted on it thing soon enough.
Exactly. I'll let you guys know how it goes.
Nice.
All right. We will end it with that. Ak, Nate, thank you for being here and joining me.
Thank you for having us, as always.
Yep. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, this was really good. And I hope we can do this again soon.
Yes.
So, cool. All right. We will end it with that and talk at you next time. Say goodbye, Kate.
That's all we got for you. Bye.
Well, that's it. My old friend Duke Zebra standing by. We'll get some coffee. We'll get some matzo ball soup.
This podcast is Hardly Focused.
I love the San Antonio Spurs, by the way. If you're betting in the NBA this year, I think they're going to win it all.
Get Hardly Focused on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
So I guess there's nothing more to say but...